This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to decide soon as Tuesday on whether to extend an August 31st deadline to airlift Americans and their allies to safety. That is according to Reuters, who cites an administration official as saying Monday that the president would decide within 24 hours whether to extend the timeline. Reuters said some White House advisors were arguing against extending the deadline for security reasons. Biden has a virtual G7 meeting Tuesday, the seven nation with the world's largest economies. He could signal his intentions at that meeting. Reuters reported that the Taliban said foreign forces have not sought an extension and that it would not be granted if they did. White House officials said Monday that they are in a daily contact with the Taliban. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told reporters that those talks concern, in his words, every aspect of what's going on in Kabul right now. Sullivan said about 16,000 people were flown out of Hamid Karzai International Airport in Kabul Sunday and Monday. Concerning the deadline, Sullivan said the president is taking this day by day and will make his determinations as we go. In an interview with Britain's Sky News, Taliban spokesman Suhail Shaheen said that the U.S. extends the deadline, in his words. That means that they're extending occupation. He said such an action would provoke a reaction. Residents in the U.S. Northeast began cleaning up the damage caused by Tropical Storm Henri, whose remnants continue to bring rain to the region that rarely gets a direct hit from a southern-generated storm. The storm downgraded to a tropical depression. It was located Monday evening over Massachusetts and was expected to be back at sea by Tuesday morning. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. The office of the Tunisian president, Kais Saied, said Monday that he has extended the suspension of parliament until further notice, a month after freezing it, a move that opponents decried as a coup. He also extended an order denying political immunity to the country's lawmakers. A statement from the president's office promised that he would deliver an address to the Tunisian people in the coming days. He sacked Tunisia's government on July 25th and said that he was suspending parliament for a month in order to prevent the country from collapse brought on by economic troubles in the COVID-19 pandemic. Several politicians, businessmen, and judges, as well as members of parliament who lost their immunity after he suspended the legislature, have said they were banned from traveling abroad or put under house arrest without warning. A U.S. police officer has been cleared of wrongdoing in the shooting death of a woman who joined the January 6th attack on Congress by supporters of former President Donald Trump. The U.S. Capitol Police determined that the officer acted lawfully and correctly under department policy, which permits deadly force in defense of human life, including the officer's own life, or in the defense of any person in immediate danger of serious physical injury. Officer who has not been identified shot the protester Ashley Babbitt, a 35-year-old Air Force veteran, as she attempted to break through a doorway with dozens of others behind her. Trump supporters have sought to elevate Babbitt as a martyr, even as the U.S. Justice Department is seeking to prosecute close to 600 of those who took part in the violent January 6th attack. Trump, who had encouraged his supporters to stop Congress from certifying rival Joe Biden's victory in the November presidential election, has called her death a murder. A fire on an offshore platform operated by Mexican oil and gas giant Pemex has left at least five people dead, two missing, six injured. Pemex made the announcement Monday, saying the blaze led to the suspension of work at more than 100 oil wells that rely on platforms for power. The accident occurred Sunday in the southern Gulf of Mexico during maintenance work. The Pemex chief, Octavio Romero, told reporters at a news conference that one of the injured was in serious condition. Pemex says it has launched an investigation into the blaze. It said the fire was brought under control after about an hour. The judge overseeing Purdue Pharma's bankruptcy said that some members of the Sackler family who owned the OxyContin maker face a substantial risk of liability and could be on the hook for huge amounts of money over claims that the company fueled the opioid epidemic. There's more at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 24, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambian President-elect Hakainde Hichilema is being sworn in today, Tuesday.
We don't have anything yet to celebrate about. We are just gearing ourselves to say, let us deliver to the people of this country.
A conversation with the youngest candidate ever to be elected mayor of a major Zambian city. Somalia's opposition candidates reject government's election plan. Rwanda launches COVID-19 vaccination campaign in the capital, Kigali. And Liberia's president suspends an official for alleged corruption and warns would-be investors.
One of the things we see in Africa is all investors coming to the country want to be associated with the president of it, which is wrong. Investors must learn to follow the procedure. There should be no shortcut.
Tanzania's president's alleged remarks about female soccer players, and a Senegalese man dresses in a woman's clothing to take a university entrance exam. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Several African leaders and government officials have begun arriving in the Zambian capital, Lusaka, for today's inauguration of President-elect Hakainde Hichilema of the opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, following that country's August 12 election. UPND spokesperson Cornelius Mwitwa says there is nothing yet to celebrate for the UPND, but simply getting ready to deliver for the people of Zambia.
Everything right now is in the hands of the government operators. The secretary to cabinet is the one who is in charge. And true to what we have stood for 22 years now is to respect the rule of law, to respect government which is in place. And we don't want to do a takeover of government before we are close to the authorities so to do.
Any idea how many foreign leaders are expected for today's ceremony?
I think that a number of leaders around the region, the SADC, will be there. I'm also aware that even the Brentwood institutions, the IMF and the World Bank, have indicated that they are sending representatives to this inauguration for the very first time in the history of this country. And for us, that is confidence expressed as to the leadership that is coming through. We will be sincere to ensure that we do not let the people of this country down, we do not let the international community down.
Exactly so, because I want to believe that this is an exciting day for the UPND, but most especially the president-elect. After all, this is or was the sixth time that he ran for president of Zambia.
Yes, of course, that joy cannot be hidden. For all who have stood in this struggle in the UPND, very faithful people, it has been a long struggle. But for HH and those of us who are privileged to be around him, while the rest of the nation is celebrating, we don't have anything yet to celebrate about. We are just gearing ourselves to say, let us deliver to the people of this country. And when we have delivered, maybe at that stage, that is the time we'll be able to say, can we also now celebrate? We are not celebrating a victory in terms of a vote. We want to celebrate victory in terms of attending to the challenges of the people, ending political violence, ending political cadarism, ending political impunity, reducing and eradicating corruption, creating jobs for many young people, being able to diversify the agricultural sector away from monopoly of dependence on mining. These are some of the things we want to be able to pursue vigorously to ensure that the people of this country at last should be able to say, here's a leadership in place that has responded. We may not do everything we said we will do, but we'll do our best to ensure that we gravitate in the direction of bringing to fruition the aspirations of the people of Zambia.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
Cornelius Mwitwa is spokesperson for Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. In Zambia, 27-year-old George Mwanza is the youngest candidate ever to be elected mayor of a major city. Mwanza, who stood as an independent candidate, was declared winner of the Chipata Council mayor seat. He defeated the second-placed candidate with over 20,000 votes. Youth Group says Mwanza's victory sends a strong signal that young people can be part of the decision-making process by seeking political office. Mwanza tells viewers Peter Clotty that leadership is not about age, but about one's ability to resolve the challenges of the people.
I was so happy when I was declared a winner of the 2021 mayoral elections and subsequently becoming the youngest mayor, the youngest person to hold the position of mayor in the entire Republic of Zambia.
What motivated you to become an independent candidate, because the election appeared to be split down the middle? Either you are going for the main opposition UPND alliance or the ruling party, the Patriotic Front. So what motivated you to decide that you want to be an independent candidate?
I come from a district where it's predominantly dominated by the youth and women. But now I've been on the ground and working with them. I'm a passionate advocate of decentralization, or simply put, power to the people. And when time for elections came, I offered myself to stand on the PF ticket. But as usual, the adoptions were being determined on age and corruption. And I was kicked out. So I moved on, and I said, the people told me that we believe in your leadership, as an individual and not as a political party. So go ahead with the people who vote for you. And I went ahead to stand to contest elections as an independent mayor. It has never happened from 1964, when we got independent, that someone won an election as mayor on an independent ticket.
What message does your victory send to the youth in Chipata and the entire country, Zambia?
You know, we only have 5 cities in Zambia. One of it is being headed by me as the youngest mayor. The message here is that it's possible for any person, any young person, to make it. That success is achievable. That indeed it's possible to realize, to dream and realize our dream. It's possible for a young person to dream big, and that the dreams do come true. It's also possible for a young person to be able to make a difference and break all barriers, imaginary or real barriers. That is what my victory actually simply means.
George Mwanza, you know, expectations are high for you to meet as a youth, because some people will say that the youth are not experienced, they don't have the necessary tools or skill set to administer effectively as mayors or councillors or top political positions. So you have a lot to prove. What message do you want to send to people whose expectations are high and those who are skeptical about your abilities to govern effectively as a mayor of Chipata?
I would like to say that the people of Chipata City, the people of Zambia, should know that the time to provide progressive leadership has come. And for me, I know that what is most important is the drive to make a change. Experience, we've had a lot of elderly people that have gone before us, become mayors and whatnot, but they've not been able to effect the change that the people have always aspired to see. What I'm simply telling them is that we have the drive, I have the energy to effect the change. And the leadership pendulum in this world, in this country, is drifting towards youth, because we have the education, we have the energy and the passion, the drive to effect the change. And in any case, we have lived the experience that young people are facing, that of unemployment, that of lack of support and whatnot. So we are saying that we are here to effect the change. We are here to modernize and bring innovation in the system, in the way that things are being run at the city council level. And that is what we are going to do. So I would like to tell and assure everyone else that indeed we are going to effect the change and make our generation proud and that of the old people.
George Mwanza is the youngest candidate ever to be elected mayor of a major Zambian city. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty. Somalia's opposition presidential candidates for September's indirect election have rejected the government's election plan. Mohamed Kahia reports from Mogadishu.
The Opposition Council of Presidential Candidates, or CPS, released a statement Monday saying they reject a new election roadmap proposed by the federal government and regional leaders. The opposition argues that the process will give five regional leaders too much power in selecting the electoral delegates who will choose 275 members of parliament. This is opposition leader Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud. He says there's need for a clear path towards the process on who will select the delegates and whom they represent, since the parliamentary polls is based on 4.5 power sharing formula. The former head of state adds they don't want another delay on the polls, which were already delayed twice before, and thus demands a clear timetable. The 4.5 formula refers to a plan for sharing power among Somalia's dominant clans. The indirect election of the parliamentarians is scheduled to commence early next month, before the crucial presidential poll on October 10th. But analysts say this new stalemate will delay the presidential poll if not urgently resolved. Abdel Fattah Hassan is a Somali political analyst. The new grievance by the opposition members will further push back the process to a specified date. He recommends urgent dialogue by the political stakeholders to avoid another election setback in the fragile nation. Somalia's election process was originally scheduled to start last year, but has been repeatedly delayed by political disagreements in spite of pressure from the international community. In April, Somali lawmakers voted for an extension of the president's mandate, only to reverse that decision in May, following violent clashes between opposition and government supporters in the capital, Mogadishu. Mohamed Kahir for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 24. The Rwandan government on Monday launched the third phase of its COVID-19 vaccination campaign in the capital, Kigali, targeting all residents aged 18 years and above. The Ministry of Local Government has warned that those who refuse to be vaccinated may be denied some services in the future. Eugene Uwimana has details from Kigali.
Hundreds of Kigali residents, mainly youth, on a Monday turned out in big numbers at the 30-designated sites to get their COVID-19 vaccines. A cross-section of Rwandans who spoke with VOA expressed their happiness for what they called an opportunity to save their lives from the deadly pandemic. At first, the government targeted elderly people and we as youth. We thought our turn might take a long time, but I'm very happy and I was amazed to be informed that you can get the vaccine shot. I knew some people who died from COVID-19. That's why I didn't hesitate to come. I am very glad and pleased to have been able to come to take the vaccine. As a young Rwandan, this is a gift granted by the government. I have just been vaccinated now, and I feel very well. I am well. I thank countries that are supporting Rwanda to get these vaccines that are saving us. The Ministry of Local Government says that it was a good thing that many Rwandans are eager to be vaccinated. Gatabazi Jean-Marie Vianney is the minister. He says people should know that they need vaccines for their own well-being, but also for accessing other public services. You cannot say you won't be vaccinated when the government provided the vaccine. We are reaching on a principle where if you didn't adhere to measures others have been respecting, then you would be privated some services. This vaccination campaign is currently being conducted in Rwanda's capital, Kigali. But as Daniel Ngamije, the Minister of Health, says, the ministry is working hard to achieve its vaccination target.
Our intention is to reach at least 30% of our population which will be vaccinated by the end of this year. And next year, 60% of our population, we expect to get them vaccinated. So this is our target. And we thank all partners who are coming to join us to get vaccines available for us.
The British ambassador to Rwanda, Omar Dail, says the UK has realized that to win the fight against COVID-19, countries need to be in the battle together. He says his country donates more doses to African countries through COVAX, the worldwide initiative to get vaccines to low-income nations.
I think we certainly are all in it together, because we're very clear in the UK that we can't solve this issue by just vaccinating our own population or just vaccinating the European population. If this disease continues to be prevalent in other parts of the world, it will always be a threat to us all. We are going to donate 100 million doses in general, by June next year, 80 million of which will go to COVAX.
The new Rwanda vaccination campaign targets 90% of all adult residents of Kigali City in the next 2 weeks. So far, the government says more than 1 million people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. The country is preoccupied with bringing back economic activities in Kigali on a track. Eugene Uwimana for VOA Daybreak Africa, Kigali, Rwanda.
Liberia's Minister of State for Presidential Affairs, Nathaniel McGee, says President George Weah does not tolerate any act of corruption. He says to reinforce that message, the president has appointed a new chair of the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission and proposed a law to the national legislature to empower the country's anti-corruption commission. This comes after President Weah on Monday suspended Mrs. Makena Keita, Presidential Special Projects Coordinator, for soliciting $5 million from a group of South African businessmen who were in Liberia to explore investment opportunities. In a letter published in the local media, the South Africans said they were invited to Liberia by Mrs. Keita to discuss their proposals for power, energy, and waste management projects. Minister of State for Presidential Affairs, Mike Gee, says President Weah repeated his advice for would-be investors to always work with the National Investment Commission of Liberia.
Our president does not tolerate any act of corruption. Because of that, the president has appointed a new LACD chairman. The president has presented a legislation to the legislature to empower the LACD. The president is very serious in making sure that corruption is dealt with. So not even individual associates of the president will engage in anything and go with impunity. So the fact that Mrs. Keita works in the president's office in the Ministry of State, and she has been complained, that's the reason why the president took the action to make sure that she's suspended. And an immediate investigation is done by the legal advisor, who is the lawyer of the president and also the Minister of State. And if he establishes sufficient reason, Mrs. Keita needs to be turned over to the Minister of Justice, therefore she will be.
You said these are allegations. Who made the allegations?
There's one group from South Africa. They complained that they were invited by some group to Liberia, but they interacted with Mrs. Keita. And all these different allegations, they made a complaint, and the complaint didn't look to.
Why did President Weah send Ms. Keita to his personal lawyer or his lawyer and not to the Anti-Corruption Commission?
Ms. Keita works in the office of the presidency. So the president lawyer needs to first of all establish where the fights are there. And once the fights are there, then she can go to Justice Ministry, because she's a low-level employee. And so there's a process in the ministry you have to go through. So you have to exhaust that before going to the Ministry of Justice. The legal advisor is an internal lawyer of the ministry, and he established a fight. When he established a fight, he advises the president that the matter needs to go to the Minister of Justice, then will proceed to that level. But at that regional level, we have to go to justice. So the first thing, you have to find out what transpired, who were involved, and those who were involved, I'm told police have already arrested some. Those who were arrested by the police who do not work for the Ministry of State, they will be transferred to the Minister of Justice.
So why does the president's office have or is involved in investment matters rather than the National Investment Commission?
I can't answer that question. You're listening to the president. Firstly, when investors come to the country, they need to go to the National Investment Commission. The president reiterated that position today, that investors should stop trying to find a shortcut to go to the presidency. One of the things we see in Africa is all investors coming to the country want to be associated with the president's office, which is wrong. Investors must learn to follow the procedure. There should be no shortcut. Individuals wanting to come to Liberia to invest, Liberia is a free country. You have the right to come to invest. When any individual tells you that, look, I want to take you to the presidency, look, I'm going to the presidency, you do not need any special favoritism or favor to come and see the president. Once you go through the NIC, and the NIC believes you're a genuine investor and there's a need to see the president, the NIC will make sure that you see the president. And nobody should tell you, no, I can make you see the Minister of State or I can make you see the Minister of Finance.
There's a saying that where there is smoke, there is fire. So therefore, there are some...
When fire is there, we'll establish the fire and we'll take the appropriate action.
Okay, I was saying that there are some who are suggesting that what Ms. Keita is accused of could be a common practice in Liberia.
This is Africa. And individuals who may be saying that maybe they have been engaged in this kind of thing. But what we're saying, you got a whole individual responsible for what they do. You can't generalize things.
Thank you very much again, Mr. McGee. It's always very nice to talk with you.
Thank you.
Nathaniel McGee is Liberia's Minister of State for Presidential Affairs. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. This month, a young man and a woman in Senegal were sentenced to a week in prison after the man dressed in a woman's clothes and attempted to present himself as a woman, his girlfriend, in order to take the English part of the baccalaureate. Known as the BSc, the exam is required to enter public universities in Senegal, but the rates of passing are low. Hadi Ba, a philosophy professor and education expert in Senegal, talks to Ricky Stryak about how the BSc legacy inherited from the colonial system has been challenging for Senegal's youth.
It is an obstacle because we have something like of the 100,000 people doing the BAC, you will have something like 30% that would have the BAC. So, and if you don't have the BAC, you can go to public universities. You can do a lot of stuff. So it's an obstacle. It's a very important exam socially.
Why do you think the rate is so low of succeeding in the BAC, and is it an indication that there needs to be some kind of change in the educational system in Senegal?
It's an indication of the quality of the education system, actually. We have an education system that produces only people, a generation, only 30% has the capacity to have the high school exam. It is also an indication of the nature of the system, because we have inherited from the French a very selective system, in which people are not teachers, for example, will not consider that it is a reflection of themselves that their students do not succeed. They will just consider that they are here to select the best of the students. So this is why we have this very low rate.
That was Hadi Ba, a philosophy professor and education expert in Senegal. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan is being criticized for saying that women soccer players have flat chests and therefore may not be good-looking for marriage. The French news agency reported that the president made the remarks at a ceremony on Sunday to celebrate the victory of the National Men's Soccer Team Championship. Neville Mina is the secretary for Tanzania's Editors Forum. He says while President Suluhu Hassan did make the comment, when placed in proper context, she was really rooting for Tanzanian female footballers.
It is true that President Samia, that's what she said, but the context was like sympathizing with the women footballers, that they play very hard and sometimes they bring praise to our country. They do very well compared to their male counterparts. But at the end of the day, they end up with nothing. So she was just calling up the football, soccer family and football stakeholders and other sports fans in Tanzania to make sure that women footballers, they end up with something when they retire. And she was like making joke around of it, that, you know, these ladies, they play so hard and sometimes their chests are flattered. They can't even attract men to get married. So if being the case, why should not the soccer family and the other stakeholders take care of these ladies so that at least they get consoled by having something when they get out of football in terms of retiring or going out to pursue other interests. Actually, that's what she meant in her speech.
I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.